storm-tossed boulders instead of probing sheltered mudflats like so many of their kin. The two lookalikes are the purple sandpiper of the Atlantic and the rock sandpiper of the Pacific. They wouldn't normally be singing in winter on the jetties, but their songs are just too good to pass up. Short-legged and portly as sandpipers go, the two often feed alongside slightly larger turnstones, specialized shorebirds that share their daredevil habits. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
To quote Big, I'm not from Houston, but I rap a lot, snap a lot, open and close this app a lot, honestly, on my Macintosh. These fake kings are from a castle called Cap-a-Lot. I'm laid back and nap a lot, just in shorter stretches. Creatively, I'm sort of restless, even though I just said I rested before. Guess I'm more complex and I spread an important message, expressing all thanks and requests before I order breakfast. That's just a slice of a day in the life, babies and wife. Can't wait for inspiration to strike. I just write crazy stories like Arabian Nights. They say this black boy's brighter than some stadium lights. Rwandese taught me manners, but indeed this Canadian's nice. With the pen, all the phrasing's precise. Blazing the mics. Look, they say the people seeing reels don't want to see the real, just comedy on the feed. They want the Key and Peele. No problem, I give them honesty and feels regardless. Never daunted by economy and deals, dog. I'm different, I've been that gym rat. Made income and interest, but I'm in this for the impact. Rap's not something you can win at or bring back. It's freedom within the limits of the rhythms and syntax. Stuff is tough to hear. I'm holding up the mirror. No Justin Spears, musketeer. No puppet here. Plus, man, it's been a couple years. So much corruption, no trust, just fear. More homeless, though there's so much construction. Weird, more luxury, but more suffering. Poor judgment. I still got a lot to say. They saying AI can say it, Satan, not today. Same on and off the stage. I don't rap to complicate or puzzle you, but like a puzzle to put things in proper place and walk away. Fight the good fight, push to put right what we should until it's good night, good rest for a good life. They say I cook like a 3-star chef. See what he achieved with even 3 bars left. Maybe world peace, like he's our test. Anything is possible if you believe Garnett. We'll reach our best. Dopest style, I run the show like I wrote the pilot. I don't promote the violence, been woke as open eyelids. I make this post and I'm back on my oath of silence. Holding fam close and smiling. Look, I never had to dress sharp, never had the guest stars. I came correct before IG gave the check marks. Eckhart totally means Bret Hart. Best bars, you wanna rewind, but also wanna hear the next part. Next part, next part, next part. KT. Shad.
That was A Day in the Life from Shad and 14K from a new album that's on our playlist here at CJSF. That was a great tune. Loved that beat. Coming up soon here on CJSF 90.1 FM, your community radio station based up here at Simon Fraser University, but broadcasting to the entire Greater Vancouver region. Up at 11 o'clock is Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. A little after that, at 12 noon, Nick Legacy and Wandering Rhythms, music from around the world. A little later in the afternoon, typically Tuesdays, up at 3 o'clock. And at 2 o'clock, our Burnaby High School students are up with the ACET program at 2 o'clock. Find out what's happening with teens straight from, I guess, the horse's mouth.
Okay.
All right. We have a nice documentary for you here. This is produced by CJSF, and it's about the Patricia Hotel, which is based down on Hastings Street near the downtown east side, or in the downtown east side. And many years ago, it was one of Vancouver's premier jazz venues. It's still a music venue to this day, but this is This is a documentary. Hope you enjoy this.
The Patricia Hotel has occupied the corner of Dunleavy and Hastings of the Vancouver East Side for over 100 years. Its lifespan approaches that of Vancouver itself. The surrounding Strathcona neighborhood grew alongside the hotel and has supplied some of the city's richest history. A wealth of culture moved along those streets and through the corridors of the hotel. People's lives pulsed through the building's arteries and spilled out into the world. The building has weathered the Vancouver rains and the neighborhood's mounting social struggles. It continues to provide affordable lodging to travelers in one of the world's least affordable cities, and supports local performers who would otherwise go unnoticed. The story of the hotel begins where the story of old Vancouver ends, because new Vancouver could only rise after old Vancouver burned. James Johnston is an East Vancouver House researcher and historian.
On June 13, 1886, there was a big wind that came up and a stump fire spread to some other debris, and the wind was going in the right direction, or the wrong direction, I guess, for the city of Vancouver. And in 40 minutes, the new city of Vancouver basically exploded. They said that Vancouver didn't actually burn down. It actually exploded and was consumed in 40 minutes.
Lonnie Russworm is an East Vancouver resident and local historian.
When the fire came, it pretty much cleared out all these rickety, you know, shacks that were thrown up. And so when they rebuilt, which the rebuilding started right away, and it was sort of gave them a clean slate to build what the developers assumed would be like this major West Coast metropolis.
Construction on what would become the Patricia Hotel began in 1910. Originally intended as a doctor's office, the founder of the building, Dr. Thomas Wilson, would not survive to see its completion. The property was acquired by Edward Mulhern, who converted the space into a hotel and opened for business in the summer of 1913. The city had become the modern metropolis predicted by the developers. The railway was bringing in new residents, and the historic Hastings Mill, located a few minutes' walk from the Patricia Hotel, was supplying work to loggers from all over the world.
There's an ad from a 1913 News Herald that talks about it being a new popular priced hotel, and that they advertised it as being two blocks from City Hall. Perhaps that was a draw. You know, it was trying to say that it was really in the center of the happening part of Vancouver.
The typical tenant would be a logger who works out in logging camps most of the year, and then he makes a bunch of money and he comes to Vancouver to spend the winter and blow this wad of cash in his pocket on booze and women and whatever else he's into. Yeah.
They were out to sow their wild oats, to have fun, to maybe have a little bit of a dust up with whoever, but it was to get rid of all the stress, the accumulated stress of living in very, very primitive, cold conditions out in the wild. And so it would have been a rather interesting mix of customers in the Patricia Hotel at that time.
By 1917, Hastings Street had become a swinging entertainment district. The Patricia Hotel opened a cabaret under the title Patricia Cafe, later renamed Pat's Pub. Ada Bricktop Smith, the nightclub queen of Europe, was singing, dancing, and dodging loggers at the hotel before her move to Paris. In her memoirs, Bricktop by Bricktop, she recounts a particularly rowdy New Year's Eve at the cafe.
No one knows what the fight was all about. Everybody was beating up on everybody else. Bowman's was a large place. I remember all the fists flying and glass breaking, but that's all I remember. It was one of those special occasions when I lost count of how many drinks I've had. Next thing I knew, I was in the bed in a white room. My right leg was in a splint and my head felt as if it was about to come off. I was in a hospital and my leg was broken. A gal I knew called Dago was standing by the side of the bed. I couldn't believe it when she told me that I kept trying to get into the brawl the night before. You kept running in the middle of all those punches and someone kept pushing you back out, but that didn't stop you. You got right back in the middle of it again and you got pushed out again, but this time you fell down a flight of stairs. She told me I'd been given quite a time to the doctor who tried to set my leg. He'd just come from a party and was feeling no pain himself. We must have been quite the pair. I rolled and turned so violently that I broke three splints. He hadn't been too drunk to do his job, though. My leg healed in a normal length of time and never gave me a bit of trouble. I never told my mama what really happened, just in case she happened to hear something through the grapevine. I wrote and said that I'd sprain my ankle.
I'm picked up to raise in a lion's den, but my nightly occupation is stealing other women's men.
Ada Bricktop Smith, she was a singer and dancer with the Patricia Orchestra, and another one is Jelly Roll Morton. He's probably the most famous guy who played there.
Jelly Roll Morton played the piano for me.
He used to bill himself as the originator of jazz. Both of their descriptions of the Patricia in Vancouver at the time was that, yeah, the audiences didn't really get it.
James Dandifer is a Vancouver-based composer and jazz clarinetist.
What? I'm from here. I've been playing Jelly Roll Morton's music, and I didn't know that he lived in Vancouver and that he worked at Pat's Pub, which is, you know, obviously still standing.
There was this idea, I guess, like a slippery slope kind of tendency in terms of morality, where you starts out with going into a place for, you know, drinking a little beverage, and then music comes on, and then especially with like this crazy jazz music, it's like becomes a little bit sexual maybe.
Jazz originally was jazz, J-A-S-S, which was slang for sex. That kind of keys you into what this music meant at the time. It was really passionate, exciting, and sexy.
It was the leading edge of music at the time, and people responded to it in the same way that people responded to rock and punk now. And it had its fans, and it had its people who didn't like it.
Ain't nobody dead. Somebody must be dead drunk. Don't tell me. I think it's a funeral. Say, look here. People, I do hear a funeral. People, I hear that trombone phone.
The greatest crash in the history of the New York Stock Exchange and market prices.
Provide health care for every man, woman, and child.
How far would you go with that? How far would you extend that?
Just watch me.
No, I've got cancer in my lungs.
Meat pepper, I put it on my plate.
Set on fire in downtown Vancouver. Some windows broken in office buildings. Riot police have been deployed trying to control...
A century later, Vancouver has hardened. The roads are all paved now, and the structures lining them are formed from rebar and concrete. The neighborhood around the hotel has descended into unyielding poverty, while the bourgeoisie sit poised in trendy shops around its perimeter. The Patricia Hotel continues to serve underfunded travelers, and in the evening, showcases local performers in the same room where Jelly Roll and Ada shook the walls. For the past decade, East Vancouver has hosted an inspired musical moment, which prowled through the venues on Hastings Street. Shearing sonics and daring performances are on offer as young musicians expressed themselves and grasped for things out of reach. Their vibrations often left to mingle with those of Ada and Jelly Roll in the brick walls of Pat's Pub. Ryan Dick is a local record label owner and musician.
I don't know if Pat's is really in an entertainment district anymore. I mean, closer to Gastown, I've definitely noticed there's a lot more clubs and a lot more, like, normal people coming in from the suburbs to go, you know, do whatever normal people do on a Friday night, which is kind of nice because you don't have to deal with suburbanites for the most part.
Adrian Burris is a musician based in Vancouver.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely one of the venues that was plugged into what was happening in the music scene. Like, it was a safe place, it was fun, it was, you know, easy to get a show there, there was always shows happening.
Vancouver at that point was well known for, like, cutesy indie pop stuff, and then all these bands started that were making pretty noisy punk music, so it was pretty exciting, it was really fun.
I definitely wanted in, and I definitely wanted to be part of what I thought was really progressive and interesting music.
Music Waste is a local music festival, and we try to focus on new artists every year. Yeah, Pat's has always been really supportive of Music Waste. They always are happy to give us the days, and there's been some pretty fun shows there.
I've never really felt unsafe in the Hastings area. You know, I've been attacked in Surrey, but not on Hastings. People look out for each other down here, and they care about each other, and yeah.
Richard Peterson and Deborah Adams stayed in the Patricia Hotel in the summer of 2014.
We arrived in Vancouver a warm July afternoon. I had booked a room at the Patricia Hotel. The area where the hotel stands is one of the most infamous in Vancouver. Everyone knows that East Hastings is a place you will die instantly. A hotel on Hastings is one where the doors won't lock, the faucets will drip, and the door to the bathroom will be lightweight with a minimum 2-inch gap at the bottom. An adventure. Deborah wasn't so sure. Her tropical vacation a few months earlier had been loaded. Love and the idea of forever was on my mind. The place was going to be perfect, and it wasn't. Something didn't feel right. It was the turning point. The Patricia has a great location. Eat some baozi from Chinatown, or the most trendy burger at that upstairs place down Main. The hotel is old. It's great. Instantly transported to my grandmother's house. The counter guy was efficient and so very concerned with who came first. We came first. He reached across the counter and hit the elevator button for us. How pleasant. Some real old-timey service. All food and beer with friends that evening. Things were chatty and enjoyable. Deborah mentioned the thing. It was our big argument before we left China. I was a little drunk and said something that could have been sexy, but ended up not so. I could see she wanted to tell the story. I was slightly opposed. When I returned from the bathroom, the secret had been kept, and for the rest of my trip, I was swamped by questions unanswered. Deborah was tired, but I had decided long ago that I would go to a concert that evening. I was racked with guilt and trying to make up for the approved activity for that evening. Offering to go back with her and then come back, though, it was clear I didn't want to. I believe the words were, "You're acting like a douche." I was. She was fine. I returned to the hotel at 2 a.m. and joined a sleeping Deborah in the soft bed. A couple days later, my friends were invited to our room in the early morning in order to stage a walking adventure through town. We were four now, and the room tightened accordingly. Below, a woman yelled profanity into the void. A bus pushed into a lane. My friends commented on the strange bathroom layout. Deborah remarked how she could take a dump and put her feet up on the bed at the same time. On our way to the lobby, my buddy and I bolted down the stairs. Century-old floorboards thundered. Deborah and Larry took the elevator. After a day of fun in the sun, Deborah was a little tired of hanging with people she didn't really know and wanted alone time. Her decision to flee was made as the sun slipped away. No guilt tonight. The cab ride got us back to the open arms of Pat's Pub and the last hours of Jazz Fest. Gentle music flowed out of the fire exit where we smoked frequently, a behavior seemingly out of fashion around most of Vancouver. The neighborhood around the Patricia Hotel isn't particularly fashionable, however. Our smokes were in high demand. Deborah was flying out the next day, but I was staying behind, leaving the Patricia for my friend's couch. Deborah and I said a goodbye that lingered, one of our last. My buddy picked us up at the hotel and drove us to Waterfront Station for a last-minute stroll before the airport. On the way to my friend's place, we drove past the Patricia. It may just be where all roads in Vancouver lead. The kidney of the city. It was sunny.
Most recently, the Patricia Hotel has reclaimed its musical roots and established itself as one of Vancouver's premium jazz venues. Several days a week, local performers take charge of the stage and aspire to have their tones connect with listeners.
As a jazz musician in Vancouver, knowing that one of the geniuses of jazz music played there, that really affects the feel of the place. The first time I walked through those doors, I just felt this connection to the past. I felt like this sort of, I was just sort of awestruck. Like this is where it happened, you know. And so I know as a performer, I feel there's a certain energy there that that comes from knowing what the past was.
James Dandifer continues to perform in Vancouver and can be reached at jamesdandifer.com. Adrian Burris performs as Adrian Teacher with his latest group, The Subs. Ryan Dick continues to support essential local talent with his record label, Hockey Dad Records. Lonnie Russworm's book, Vancouver Was Awesome, can be found at your local bookstore and library. And James Johnstone hosts walking tours of historic Vancouver neighborhoods and can be reached at historywalksinvancouver.blogspot.ca. Produced with the support and assistance of CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia, and the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
And, of course, the Patricia Hotel is still down on Hastings Street at Dunleavy.
I'd like to say something briefly about it. They have a neon sign intact. The Ovaltine Cafe has a more spectacular one, but it's not working well. That little O, that kind of goes. So I don't know. But as I
the Maple Hotel, which is just a little further west on Hastings, other side of Main Street, also has a really great sign. Although I don't think all the elements are working on that either.
But the thing about the Patricia Hotel, it's sort of a very basic one, but it's all working, and it's you all the letters are there, so I just wanted to make note about that.
You know, I wonder if the city or the province should have a little program for those classic neon signs to get some funding for, because often they're on older buildings which maybe aren't generating a ton of income to support the repairs that might be needed.
Well, here in Burnaby, there was a store called Helen's, and their neon sign was a girl swinging, and Helen's went out of business, so the city of Burnaby calls it the Heights. Instead of saying
Burnaby Heights along Hastings.
No, it says Heights instead of Helen's, and we still have the girl swinging and the neon.
Yep.
So that's here in Burnaby, we're a cut above Vancouver in that one.
So we did a little checking on street checks, and... They were an issue, big issue, as I recalled, in Vancouver, and the BC Civil Liberties Association sort of launched a complaint about them, and you know, an investigation of statistics did in fact find that they were being applied in an unbalanced way, with Black and Indigenous folks being the largest, being checked out of. In excessive amounts compared to other folks. The city did pass a motion to ban them in July 2020.
Oh, 2020. It's I didn't know we had it so close by here.
Yeah. And the BC Civil Liberties Association has a great sort of primer on street checks. And I'm just going to do one little quote from there, if I got it still up. You know, are street checks legal? Street checks are not authorized at common law. People in Canada have the right to move freely without fear of unjustified state intervention. Street checks interfere with both a person's liberty interest, Section 9 of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, states that everyone has the right to be not be arbitrarily detained and imprisoned, and privacy interest, which is Section 8 of the Charter. So, yeah, I mean, there's a strong constitutional argument that they're a problem. So it's interesting to see that they're still happening in Montreal.
Oh, well, that's bad.
All right.
Okay, so we're going to talk about James Eads Howe.
Yep.
He lived from 1874 to 1930. He was born in the Privilege, but he created something called the International Brotherhood Welfare Association. And what it was that he felt... just because he was born in the Privilege, he wasn't anything special about that. So he rode the rails, and don't do it. We'll end a bit about why not to ride the rails. But in those days, a lot of the works are now done. It used to be in California, illegals were doing like the picking the grapes or whatever. And now it's a migrant worker. They send them there and they go back. But in that days, up to 1930, it was mainly just white people actually doing this hard labor. And it was interesting that one of the things that the International Brotherhood Welfare Association was for an 8-hour working day.
Right.
You know, so anyway, no, so this is a bit what it says on Wikipedia, but central to Howe's work was his brainchild, the International Brotherhood Welfare Association, a sort of union for hobos with headquarters in Cincinnati. Although the IBWA, how sponsored various hobo advocated activities, including hobo colleges, hobo journalism, and conventions. The media often ridiculed Howe and his many failed projects, calling him the millionaire hobo or millionaire tramp, but it did not seem to discourage him. Now then, I'd like to briefly say the difference between bum at the time.
Yeah.
Now, they're sort of out-of-date expressions, but bum, tramp, and hobo. So a hobo travels the rails, and he works.
Yeah.
A tramp travels the rails but does not work. Charlie Chaplin was called the tramp in the movies.
The little tramp, yeah.
And a bum does not work or travel the rails. He stays in one place and does not work.
Yeah.
So that is sort of a passe a thing. Now then.
So just very quickly. So in some ways, hobo isn't necessarily a derogative term.
No.
Traveling but working.
So it was at one time, it's like, no, I am a hobo. It's like,
right.
And now hobo is like... Because a hobo, it's not really... Now, here's something, I think. After the start of World War I, the Espionage Act of 1917, and governments attacked on a larger... and governments attacked the IWW. Now, think about the IWW card. Supposedly, at one time, they had something called the Bulls. And you're right. That's one reason. And they've still got them. You'll get beaten up by the people employed by the rail company not to have you there. And supposedly one time if you had an IWW card, International Workers of the World, he presented that. It's okay, it's okay. You can be on. We won't beat you up. Stay on the rails. But anyway, and the less radical, and actually his group, the IBWA, and Hobo News also came under scrutiny. The BWA often pointed out that it was deemed distinct from the IWW, though somewhat supportive of the other of the organization. As the IWW was increasingly broken, many of its members joined the IBWA, leading to both radicalization and faction conflicts. Mr. Howe was on the moderate side and preferred the IBWA to focus on education and more immediate political issues like abolishing vacancy laws rather than direct action and sabotage. So you see that this actually, even though he was more benign than like the IWW, the establishment did not really care for him. And,
right.
And they didn't like a lot of the aspects. I came to know about him. There was a 5-page comic strip story. Here's something from that thing. Trouble was the purity of Howe's vision only existed in Howe himself. When it comes to people's principles, can get convoluted. And it goes on to say that other people were kind of, a lot of the hobos themselves, or maybe the tramps, the bums, were just interested in the free donuts. And actually, he died with starvation, it seems, even though he had the money, he had pneumonia. And he was married for a while, but he 2 years previous to him dying, they got divorced. And died, you know, kind of, he was too... keeping to his ideas. So it's sort of interesting when you compare it to other things like anarchy. There's actually a Christianity aspect to it also, mm-hmm. that he thought he was doing a more valid form of Christianity. Now here, okay, quickly, the other thing is that when you come to a tunnel, you're going to be suffocated.
If you're rail riding.
Yes, and you never know when it's going to happen. The other thing is that there's people on the rails if you don't get the Bulls beat you up, they'll say, we're the guys.
The Bulls being the railroad police.
We know how to get that boxcar not to slide on us. We know where the trains are coming up, and we know about the Bulls, and we want to ride the rails, and we don't want you here, so we're going to beat you up. So don't ride the rails. That's the big...
All right, who are you talking? You were just talking about the name again?
James Eds Howe.
Excellent. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Peter, that's it for today. Here is Democracy Now! You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM.